Okay, so here we are. We're at the beginning of... Today is the 5th of July, 2018. We have Hebrew date up there.
22.
The 22nd day of Tammuz, Tav Shanayin Ches. And we turn to the beginning of Paraklefe, the beginning of Parshas Bahar. So in the first Pasuk, right, Ver Hashem Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemor, and so the Moshe at Har Sinai saying, so we had Rashi the other day, we also went through the Ramban about what the meaning is of Bahar Sinai. So Sforno makes a, first of all, the Rashbam adds in Bahar Sinai, Kodem Shehukam Ol Moed. This was made before the Ol Moed was put up, which meant way before. Pretty earlier, and the Rashbam clearly doesn't have a problem with saying things I wouldn't say that necessarily out of order, but maybe not for sure. Okay, anyways, maybe just placing us that we're still at Har Sinai, and the Mishkan has not, although it's been put up, it hasn't been operational. I'm not sure what the Rashbam is adding here. But anyways, as Forno says, they don't mention by any other mitzvah the place that it was commanded. Zulasi kasher kara. Chiddush oba oso makom, unless there is a chiddush by that particular place. Aval be'er shekashamar ha'el yisal b'sinai, v'ashviyis tishmitena v'nitashta v'achlu evyoni imcha v'yitarem. That this was already mentioned earlier. The idea is that shviyis, the mitzvah of Shemitah, was mentioned previously. Pirish l'moshe as kol dinei ha'shviyis hamurim b'zeh makom. So therefore Moshe is explaining to us that all of the dinim of shviyis were said in this place. So this then comes teaches us Sheba Atzmo Haibachol Shar Mitzvah. This is like other mitzvahs, meaning Shemitah does have a reference earlier, a much more abridged reference earlier. That reference being at the end of Mishpatim. At the end of Mishpatim, well, not to the end. During Mishpatim, we often identify Mishpatim as an example of Chush and Mishpat mitzvah. It's not really true. It's really an introduction to all mitzvahs. It is a miscellaneous, a potpourri of mitzvahs. Starts off with Chush and Mishpat, monetary law type things, moves on to Nezikin, but then also has Shemitah and Moedim and Shabbos. It's a sampling of mitzvahs. That even though there's only a small amount mentioned there in Parshas Mishpatim, there really is a lot more to be said. Right, and that, as we say, Amram Zama Inyan Shmita La Inyan Har Sinai Elma Shmita Nemru Kolosev Dikdoseha Upe Rusha Misinai. Just as Shmita was all the details really mentioned at Sinai, Afkol Hamitzos Nemru Misinai Kolosev Dikdoseha Upe Rusha. That even all the mitzvos, all of the details were mentioned at Sinai. So as opposed to Rashi, the impression one gets is just telling us that all the mitzvos were given at our Sinai. This is telling us no, that you might see the mitzvah later on with more details, but know that all of those details were already taught at Sinai. It was already mentioned earlier. So why is this mentioned over here? This foreigner said, it's really a second question of this foreigner. So it says, okay, so why all of a sudden here are we mentioning the mitzvah of Shvius? So, because, and this is an important thing to keep in mind, they thought they were about to go into Eretz Yisrael, right? The sin of the spies is the next narrative, or maybe, you know, pretty soon after, but before that they were expecting that we're now finishing the giving of the Torah, finishing the recording of mitzvahs, and we're about getting ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. So, Kemosha Heid Ba'amru, right? Nosem Anachnu Al-Makum, that we're going to the place, as says Mamidbar Perikyot. Behizer Al-Shmita's Karka B'Frat, so therefore we have to know those details. Ki B'chatem B'Shmirasa Yiglu Mimena, because if you don't do Shemitah, guess what? You're going to be out. As we testify, as Tirtza Aretz Shavtu Seha, that the Aretz that the Aretz requires its Shemitah. That you must, until you appease the land, which is with its Shemitah. So Shemitah is a very important mitzvah. It has to do with Eretz Yisrael. They're about to go into Eretz Yisrael, and it's really a prerequisite for you to be able to stay in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore it's important for it to be taught at this particular juncture. The Or HaChaim also on this comment also sort of adds in another. Tzarech l'das lama hiske Har Sinai mitzvah zu. Why do we mention Har Sinai here? Right? Didn't we already say so? And even though they taught that teaches you all the mitzvahs in the Torah, why specifically? Why by this mitzvah, not by the first mitzvah, the last mitzvah? So it says because you're about to be getting a gift of the land of Israel. Diktek Lomar Bar Sinai. They had to be at Har Sinai. Why? Meaning Eretz Yisrael is considered a gift. Lomar ki machmas Har Sinai perish mashikiblu bohi shenigmara hamatana. That's because of Har Sinai that you were only able to accept the gift. Why? Shamanas Torah nasa Hashem es aretz. It's because on condition of the Torah is what Hashem is giving you the land. So Shemitah is the integral mitzvah to the land of Eretz Yisrael. That is what Shemitah has to do with, that it's part of our guarding of the land of Israel and our keeping of the land of Israel. And that gift of Eretz Yisrael, the prerequisite is the Torah. And therefore it's connected to Har Sinai. That's why Mitzvah Shemitah makes reference to the giving of Har Sinai, because the two of them go together. And then the Orach Chaim goes even further and says, in Ode, Al Pi Maimar Agamar Meseches Avodah Zarah, Pasku Rambam Perakim Hilchos Sechiyah, that there is a halacha that's mentioned in the Gemara as well as the Rambam, Mizel Deshonu, Aser Lases La'aku Matana Chinam Ad Kan. You're not allowed to give a non-Jew a gift for free. Now, what details of that are and how that plays itself out, halacha l'maisa. But the rule is, that's the halacha. The halacha is you're not allowed to give a free gift to non-Jews.
If it's a gift, it's not free. They're sort of oxymorons. If it's a gift, it can never be free.
That's not true.
I mean, it's always free,
Really?
Yeah. If you give a gift.
You think?
Yeah, free for it.
You think? When you give gifts to people, you're not hoping they get anything in return?
If you go to a wedding,
When you go to a wedding, you're going in exchange for, right, but there's sort of a social acceptance that you're going to a wedding, you're giving a gift, and you get a meal. Then you're going and celebrating. And then when you have kids that get married, they'll bring a gift to your kid. And it's part of the give and take of, like, we assume the halacha that gifts are not free.
Is tzedakah considered a gift?
Is tzedakah, well, no.
Why?
It's tzedakah. That's a responsibility. Tzedek, I mean, we translate, this is really different, this is really off the topic, but we translate tzedakah as charity. That's not really a great, charity, I think, means, the etymology of charity is something that I'm giving that I don't need to give. So we assume that tzedakah, the root of tzedakah is tzedek, righteousness, right? Which is what got the OU into trouble a couple of weeks ago, if anybody caught that story. But tzedek means righteousness, that things go back and forth, that really there is a demand. I mean, I'm watching Hashem's money, and Hashem demands that some of that portion be given to non-Jews. That's not a gift, it's something that I'm responsible to do. Okay, but we assume the halacha. I mean, practically speaking, we assume the ramifications of this. I'm not prepared for it right now. But we assume the halacha that any gift that one gives, there is something that you get in exchange back.
It's not equal value. Like if you go to a wedding, let's say you get $400, a meal of $20, you get $500.
Okay.
So it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, yeah, but there is something that I'm getting back. Meaning, if I have a neder hana against someone, that I'm not allowed to get benefit from someone, and I give him a gift, so we assume the halacha that's problematic, because you're going to be getting something in exchange for it. I believe that that's the case. But we assume that there is an exchange. But anyways, that you can't get anything for free. Ba'achar Kabbalah Satorah Yacholitin Lahem. So how could Hashem give Bnei Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael? Isn't that a free gift going to Bnei Yisrael? The answer is, well, Hashem gave him the Torah. That in exchange for getting the Torah. Lazelmer Bahar Sinai Shebazeh Yuchalomar Sharninu Sein Lachem. That's why it says Bahar Sinai that you got the mitzvah Shemitah, i.e., the privilege of living in the land of Israel, in exchange for the Torah, because the only way you could get any gift from Hashem is if you were promising to keep the Torah. So that is the connection as put forth by the Orach Chaim. Okay. Yeah? All right, so another offering here. It would be good if we would have our resident farmer here to say what he thinks about this next pasuk, but it says, Sheshanim.
No.
If you have something to add in the farming, you can suggest also. You'll see. So in Pasuk Gimel, it says that 6 years you're going to seed your field, and 6 years you're going to prune your vineyard, and then you're going to collect your tevua. So comes the Sforno and says, So comes this Sforno and says, "As tuchal lizroa sada echad ba'atzmo sheish shanim ritzufin." Then you will be able to plant your field for 6 consecutive years. If you keep Shemitah, you will be able to plant your field for 6 consecutive years. Shalok mishpat avoda adama, which is not the normal way of working field, which is not the way it normally works with fields. Why? Kemdam haminag bahu shia Nara Shana Vizara Shana. That the minhag is that they would let it lay fallow for a year and then seated for a year, as they mentioned in Maseches Baba Basra. Right, via Saftas Tvuasa, which is also Shalokim Minag Avodas Adama, also not the general minag of working the field. Sheim Yizru Chelka Achad Ba'atzma Shnayim Ritzufos Lotosiv Teis Kacha. That if you plant a field in consecutive years with the same crop, as the years go on, you will be losing in your produce. So comes this front and says, no, this is a bigger bracha than just, oh, Hashem says, I'll take care of you for that seventh year. By keeping the Shemitah the seventh year, you will also be, you know, will be unnatural. That the other 6 years, the amount of growth you'll get. You're not going to have diminishing returns as the years go on, which is normally the case. And if one was not going to keep Shemitahs, how often are you going to be able to plant? Really only every, like, 3 or 4 years, right? Because you're really planting then every other year.
So basically, by keeping Shemitahs, you're kind of a spiritual fertilizer. You're fertilizing your thing. Otherwise, your crops would be exhausted with the minerals, and you have to go into a fallow year to rejuvenate.
Sure. Yes, but this is this, but the pasuk is the Sforno is saying this takes place in a very physical sense, in a physical way. He's not talking about a spiritual way. He's saying a physical way that you're going to see amazing growth over the 6 years of that you're able to, so long as you allow, as long as you require it to rest for that seventh year.
But it, okay, that's why we need the farmer to do this thing. So he's implying al piteva that you would not. Now
he's
going to plant 6 years.
He's not implying that. He's saying it outright. Yeah.
Alpiteva.
It should not work.
Will have Correct.
But if you're keeping Shemitah, you will have 6 consistently fertile years. That's what the Sforno is claiming.
You're doing better than having like 3 in
a. Okay. Okay. So what else do we got here? So that's enough for the mitzvah of Shemitah. Now we move on to the mitzvah of Yovel. So the mitzvah of Yovel, so what's significant? So the first thing we learn about the mitzvah of Yovel is that you're going to count 7 years, and then you're going to count 7 sets of 7 years, and then you're going to have the shofar that's going to blow, and it's going to be Yom Kippur, and on Yom Kippur you're going to blow the shofar, and you're going to sanctify that year, and then you're going to free the slaves, and then it talks about that you're going to let the land lay fallow, right? But it sounds like the first thing is the counting and the blowing of the shofar, etc. So why do we blow the shofar? What is the meaning of this shofar blowing? So in pasuk tes, so the Sforno comment, shofar trua l'simchas chirus havadim v'ashavas hasadus lebaleim. It's a mitzvah simcha, right? One blows the shofar, and everybody's going to be joyous because the slaves go free and the fields go back to their original owners, and therefore we're blowing the shofar out of simcha. Yeah, that's the comment that the Sforno makes. So the all right, we'll do the Yovel, and then we'll go back to the Ramban. So not only that, so the Rashi continues on a little bit later on when he talks about Yovel in Pasuk Yud. It says, "V'kidashtem eshnas hachamishim shnah v'krasim dor barzchol yishveha Yovel hi." Now we already mentioned the word Yovel. No, but I think we mentioned it again a few times. Yovel hi, ki Yovel hi. Yeah. So it mentions Yovel in 3 consecutive psukim. So what does the word Yovel mean? Why is that particular year referred to as Yovel? So Rashi makes the comment, Shana zos mubdelis mishar shan, b'nekivas shem la levada, umashim, or by the fact that it gets its own name. What's its name? Yovel shama. Why? Al shem tekias shofar. Because they blow the shofar. What does Yovel have to do with blowing the shofar? So it says the Sisei Chachamim, V'im Toimar Umay Nafkamina B'kriya Shema Yovel. So blowing the shofar, what does that have anything to do with calling the year Yovel? It says V'yesh Lomar Shelo Tomar Kishetikna Eved Osada LeYovel L'chamishim Shana Kinisav Sharei Chamishim Shana Kruim Yovel L'kach Omer Yovel Hi V'lo Acheres. So lest one say that when you sell a slave or you sell a field, you're selling it for a Yovel. So what does it mean I'm selling it for a Yovel? So I would have thought that means, oh, I'm selling it for 50 years. So say no until the next time that Yovel comes along. That's what Sifra Chaim says. A little unclear. All right, okay. What does that have to do with the shofar? Until the next shofar blowing. I guess that would be the way that the Sifra Chaim would understand that. So the Ramban picks up on this. quotes Rashi and quotes others that seem to imply that as well. And he says, I don't understand it. Right? Why do we call it the year of tekiah, a year of blowing? Right? What is, why are you going to Yovel? That has the idea of return. That everybody will know that by blowing the shofar, everybody will return. Etc. And he says, but I don't get it, because the word kiperish shofros hayovlim karnei ha'elim. Because what does it mean shofros hayovlim? I think he translates that off of a pasuk. Yeah, shofros hayovlim. In Yeshua Vavhei, it talks about shofros hayovlim. So what are those? Ram's horns. So it says those are ram's horns. V'gam targum yonosan shepirishu de karen dachra v'chein begamara my mashva the hayovlish the dikra. It talks about rams. V'ashover b'yom hakipurim in miyuchad liyos me'ayil. He says it's not true that the shofar of Yom Kippur doesn't have to be from a ram. About kol shofar was kshirin bel, right? All shofars are okay, just like it's all okay for Rosh Hashanah. Exception being what? Anybody know which shofar you're not supposed to use on Yom Kippur?
A pig horn.
Well, a pig horn, yes. If you can find them. People horns, unicorns. Besides that, what else? What kosher animal are we not supposed to use?
Cow.
Cow, right? Why not?
Oh, really?
The eagle is off, correct. So in Valdas Mishnah Sein v'chot tanoim mitzvaso bishel yalim. But in fact, the Mishnah says the ideal horn to use on Yom Kippur is actually not a ram horn, but rather a goat horn. Now, rams and goats are different, right? Keep these farm animals straight. Sheep goes with goats. No.
Sheep is its own animal.
What's a male sheep?
Ram.
Rams go with sheep. Goats go with goats.
There's no male goat, I know. Really,
no female goat.
No, goats are male. Hence, they have goatees.
Goatees.
Anyways, so imkain lamatikra shnashas ayil. So if you're going to tell me that the word yovel means ram, says the Ramban, but the Mishnah tells us that the ideal, I'm not sure why, I got to look up the Mishnah, but the ideal shofar to use is a goat horn. So why wouldn't we call it the year of the goat? Why are we calling it the year of the ram? Why are we calling it the year of the goat? So Rabbi Eliezer Omer, ki yovel ketam shloach. Rather, the Ibn Ezra, he quotes the Ibn Ezra, approvingly he quotes the Ibn Ezra, that has to do with the idea of sending away. That we're not calling it based on the blowing, but rather on the freedom. Plus, we don't mention here that it's the year of the blowing it. Rather, it's thou shalt proclaim liberty throughout the land and to all its inhabitants thereof. That everybody should be freed to live where they want, right? And everybody comes home over the course of the Yovel year. So what's the, I mean, everybody goes back to their original inheritance, which is an interesting thing. Which is you prefer? The Ramban seems like for a moment there was like, well, you get to live wherever you want. But Yovel, you go back to your original inheritance, meaning you start from, you go back and start from the beginning. But anyways, the word Yovel, according to the Ramban, is the idea of chazara, the idea of return, as opposed to Rashi, who assumes that it is the idea of reference to the shofar blowing itself. Okay. Yeah, that seems to be what the Sforno says as well. The Sforno in Pasuk Yud Aleph says, Yovel hish nasach enshim shana, kamo shiyatza karka l'cheirus miyat hakonim, that the karka goes free from being held by those that acquired it. Ki kenti yet bilti mishubedes biyad bailam, it should no longer be mishubed that have to return it. Right? Shalo yishtam shubak derech bailam ba'usashana, that they're not going to be, and nor are they going to be able to be permitted to use it in the way of regular owners. I mean, what can regular owners use their land for? They use it for planting. So it's going to be returned from the people who bought it, but the people that get it, it's still going to be kadosh for. They're not going to be able to use it as one otherwise would. Okay, that I want to go back for a moment. I skipped over this, but Rashi, it was a Rashi we talked about when we went through Rashi Day, and the Ramban has a challenge with, and that is in Pasuk Tes, where he says, Avarta shofar trua b'chodesh ha-shvi'i b'sor l'chodesh. You're going to blow the shofar in the 7th month on the 10th day, 10th of the month. What is the 10th day of the 7th month, so we could figure that Vus? Bruce figured it out the other day. Can you also figure it out, Alan?
Yom Kippur.
What?
Yom Kippur.
Tishrei, Yom Kippur, yes. It's day of Yom Kippur, right? So we could figure out, without the next words of the Pasuk being, B'yom HaKippurim, on Yom Kippur. So what are we learning out from the idea that it says Yom HaKippurim? So Rashi tells us, right? Would I not know that it was that is the 10th of the month? Why do I have to say the 10th of the month? To teach you that the blowing on the 10th of the month, meaning on Yom Kippur, would be Doche Shabbos wherever you are, and blowing of shofar is not Doche Shabbos in all of your lands. Right?
Okay.
So that's what Rashi says. So this is to tell you that it sounds like even if Yom Kippur would fall on Shabbos, you would still blow shofar in the oval year. But Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos, you don't. That's what Rashi seems to say. So the Ramban is scratching his head. What's the obvious question on that? We blow shofar. We blow shofar on Yovel, Yom Kippur, Shabbos, but not on Rosh Hashanah, Shabbos. The obvious question is that...
You don't do it the other way around.
No. Just in terms of what?
Yom Kippur is holier than Rosh Hashanah.
Well, it might be. So what? If you're not bothered by this, that means you are suffering from Flintstone syndrome, right? What is Flintstone syndrome? Flintstone syndrome is that assuming whatever things are now is the way it always used to be, right? What changed at some point? So at some point, and who changed it? The Ramban is going to make an interesting point about who changed it, but something changed in the middle that they used to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and they don't anymore. I mean, there's no Isser Doraisa of blowing shofar on Shabbos. There's no Din Doraisa that we're not going to blow shofar on Shabbos. That's all Din Darabanan that came along later on. So how could the Pasuk, right, Rashi is giving pshat in the Pasuk. So how could the Pasuk be giving a pshat that if you were to ask people during the time in the Midbar, hey, why is it this and that, and you tell them, the pshat is that on Rosh Hashanah we're not going to blow shofar on Shabbos, they'll tell you, what are you talking about? Why not? Why would we not blow Rosh Hashanah? Right? That was something that came along later on. So that's the Ramban's problem. The Ramban quotes Rashi, and then says, V'nei Arav, V'nei B'kiyas V'tam V'akol L'fanach Shulchan Aruch. He says, Rashi's a big genius. He knew all of the Gemara. Everything was in front of him like Shulchan Aruch, which is interesting. The Ramban uses the terminology that the entire Torah is open in front of Rashi like a Shulchan Aruch. The book Shulchan Aruch was available on the bookshelf. No, not for another 300 years, right? So he's using that terminology here that wasn't going to become a book for another couple of years. But anyways, Eino Choshish V'Sosim HaBraisos, right? He's not concerned about this closing of Braisos. V'Hein Mitos L'Sharbanei Odom. It's going to cause a mistake for other people. She'aduhu Varba Gemara, because everybody knows, and it's clear in the Gemara, Ki'atekios Kulan Sh'Rosh Hashanah V'Yom Kippur V'Filu Shel Roshos Mutaros Hein B'Shavas, that blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and even not for the mitzvah, even just blowing a shofar, right, is permissible on Shabbos. It is a chachma, it is not a malacha. It is something that takes wisdom, right? You got to know how to do it, but there's no malacha involved in playing any instrument on Shabbos. And they would blow on a Doraisa level on Shabbos of Rosh Hashanah and on Yom Kippur everywhere, right? That's the way it always used to be. So rather, what's going on here? So this idea later on that we blow shofar on Shabbos on Rosh Hashanah only by a Beis Din, that was something that came along later on. That was an establishment of Reuchim and Zakai when they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. And the reason he established it was, by the way, what's it called normally? The idea, anybody know the idea that we won't do certain mitzvahs on Shabbos? Why? Because we may carry a dalet amos b'shus harabim. Anybody know who's that normally attributed to? Right, that we won't lay the Megillah on Shabbos, although it doesn't only happens in Eretz Yisrael, but we won't lay Megillah on Shabbos, and we won't, what else won't we do on Shabbos? Blow shofar, lay Megillah, and light Hanukkah candles. No. There's a third one that I'm missing. Oh! Shake lulav. We're not going to bring the lulav to shul either. So who is that attributed to in the Gemara? That's attributed to Rava. It's normally referred to as the Gezeirah de Rava. How long did Rava live after Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai?
He was
He was an Amora. Rav Yochanan Zakkai was a Tana, not just a Tana, but an early Tana. And Rav was a middle-aged Amora, which means that there's about, I don't know, 350 years between them? Maybe not that much. 250? Something in that range would be between Rav Yochanan Zakkai. So the Ramban, at least, I didn't check in the Shevel if he has footnotes on this, but where he got this from Yochanan Zakkai. The Yochanan Zakkai established that they're going to blow the shofar by the basin because not everybody is experts in tekiah shofar, and we're afraid that we're going to carry it. And therefore, Rav Yochanan Zakkai permitted it only by a basin. But that's nothing to do with the pasuk. That's just something that Rav Yochanan Zakkai did, right? Later on, the idea that we blow shofar, blowing shofar is docha Shabbos, tell you that we could do it every Yom Kippur. The idea that Yom Kippur that violates Shabbos, the Yom Kippur that falls on Shabbos, or Yom Kippur that stands by itself, is the same thing, right? The halachos of Shabbos apply to Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur Shabbos l'chol malacha, bein lo tza, bein l'chol malacha. So we call makam ratza harav, meaning Rashi. What did Rashi want to teach us? That the blowing of shofar on Yom Kippur would be blown everywhere. That's his pshat in the pasuk. That even though on Rosh Hashanah it might be docha, we might not blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah when it falls on Shabbos. On Yom Kippur we would. We don't blow shofar on Yom Kippur. No, we would. In the case of a Yovel, we would blow it everywhere. That's what the Ramban says is pshat in the pasuk. Now you still, or at least Rashi would tell you, is pshat in the pasuk. The simple explanation of the pasuk. Now you still a little bit of a problem, right? And that is how. But they would always have blown Yom Kippur, Yovel shofar on Yom Kippur on Shabbos, right? According to the Torah. So what's going on here? So perhaps the answer is there's a famous Taz. Actually, it has to do with this din, where he says that why do we not blow shofar on Shabbos that falls on Rosh Hashanah? Why? Because you may carry it dal amos b'shus harabim, right? Okay. What about if it's not Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah? So I blow shofar, right?
Yeah.
Can I play guitar? Can I play guitar on Rosh Hashanah when it's not Shabbos? Thank you, Bruce. No. The answer is no. The answer is no. Right? So says the Taz, I don't understand. Why am I allowed to blow shofar? Right? Shofar should have the same iser as playing guitar, or playing the drums, or playing a trumpet. I shouldn't be able to blow a shofar either. So why am I allowed to blow a shofar on Rosh Hashanah when it's not on Shabbos? So says the Taz, that the Rabbanan cannot make a gezeira that is going to be Oker Davar Min HaTorah when it's Mefurish Bekra. They can't come along and say that you're never going to do this mitzvah when the Torah explicitly says to do this mitzvah. Right? So they could come along and say, you know, knock around a little bit at the edges and say, okay, you know what, on Shabbos, the Torah tells you to do it, we're going to tell you not to do it. But say you're never going to blow a shofar again, was we're concerned about the prohibitions of Mashmiach Kol, that you're making noise on Shabbos, that the Rabbanan won't do. So maybe the Ramban is telling us that's Pshat in the Pasuk. The Pasuk is telling us you will always blow Rosh Hashanah, you will always blow what's it called? Shofar on Yom Kippur, even if it falls on Shabbos. It's Beferish Bekra. The Rabbanan don't have the right to take that possibility away from you.
They would love to.
Yom Kippur associated
with
Yom
Kippur. What?
What is Yom Kippur associated with
Yom Kippur? That's what the Torah says. What is the theme, thematically?
Yeah, because you would think that the
Yovel
year should be Rosh Hashanah, beginning of the year.
Right.
The connection.
Right. So Yovel is attempting. So Bruce is attempting to get a jump start on Musar Day. I don't know. I don't have a great. I don't have a shot at this point. Sure. Well, that it does. We forgive loans, and everything goes back to the starting point. Yes, no, we've seen that theme, and we could say, oh yeah, that theme works very well with Yom Kippur. It also works well with Rosh Hashanah, though, according to the way we observe Rosh Hashanah today. Now, how that came about, the Rosh Hashanah became a big tshuva day, that's a separate question. Alright, one more theme here. The parak is very full, but take a look towards the end, the parapasik lamed hay. So So the pasuk tells us v'chiyamuchachicha that the person, if your friend becomes yamuch, becomes impoverished, umata yadu imach v'chazakta bo ger v'toshava v'chayimach. Right, you should reach your hand to him and strengthen him, ger v'toshava v'chayimach, and he should live with you. So it says the Ramban just quickly points out v'chayachicha imach sheyichi imach. He should live with you. V'mitzvah asay lachayos, it's mitzvah asay to sustain him. Shemimena nitzdavina apikuach nefesh v'mitzvah asay. That from here there is a command of pikuach nefesh, that it's a mitzvah ha'aseh to do pikuach nefesh, to save someone's life. Comes, right, not just lo samod al dam reyecha, normally we associate the idea of saving someone's life with thou shalt not stand idly with your brother's blood, right? So that's a, might be a lo ta'aseh, don't not do it, that here is the positive, it's positively incumbent upon us to help out. But, if you think about it, this pasuk is actually used the other way. B'chaya v'chicha imach, zu dorish ben potiri. This was darshaned by Ben Potiri about shneim shayim mahalchem b'derech, two people were on the road, uviyarecha mehem kitun shomayim, and one of them had a flask of water. Im shosa hu magia liyeshuv, im shneim shosim shneim esim, that if one of them drinks, he'll get to the next settlement. If they both drink, they'll both die. So Ben Potiri said, mutav yishtu shneim b'yamusu, let them both drink and let them both die. Neither one shall see the death of their friend until Rabbi Akiva came along and said, "V'chai achicha imach." I'm not sure if that might be a different pasuk. But this is the same theme. Right? Your brother shall live with you. Chayecha kodmin l'chai chavercha. That your life still comes first. V'chazav amr v'chai achicha imach l'chazek ulahazir. Therefore, we go back and we say this pasuk to strengthen it. V'chai achicha imach. This pasuk, while it seems like it's about helping the other guy out, it's also about making sure that your life comes first. That's what we're passing. We're passing according to Rabbi Akiva. Okay, this will stop here.
When it says Ger B'Toshev,
yes, who is that referring to exactly? Right. Correct.
Is Toshev a guy?